Welcome to The Medley. I'm Blake Crash-Criddle. This week, we're going to be showcasing a Nova Scotia musician. His name is Lendon Morris, better known by his stage name, Gardner. We're going to talk about his debut album, and we're also going to learn all about his musical career. What makes this week's guest special is that we have something in common. No, I'm not a musician, but he also worked in radio. If you enjoy independent musicians and you like alternative rock and folk music, you're really going to enjoy this week's guest. What led you to become a musician?
I think it's kind of a weird thing. I kind of always liked music, and you know, like everyone does. And then around 2018, I started getting really into it. And so I just kind of listened to a lot of it and kind of dove headfirst into music as a concept. And then a lot of my friends were musicians and played, and so I got, you know, the course schedule for one of my for my second year at St. FX, and one of the classes was a guitar class, beginner guitar, and I said, why not? So I picked that, and after I learned my first few chords, it was like I couldn't stop. It was just it was a total obsession.
Did you play any instruments or do anything musical when you were a kid?
Not entirely. Like my grandfather used to play guitar and still does, and so it was kind of around a little bit. But in high school, actually, I took a music class and I played bass, and I didn't really know much, if anything, about it. But I had a great music teacher, and bass. Bass was my first instrument. I tried guitar lessons when I was maybe 8 years old. And I remember the guitar teacher telling me to, like, you know, everyone tune their guitar, and I didn't know what that meant, so I left, and I went home. Like, I didn't have much patience for it, but bass was, I played bass a little bit in high school, but that's about it.
I always found the hardest thing about playing guitar is knowing where to put your fingers and memorizing that position and also tuning the guitar. I remember taking guitar lessons for a short time and, tightening it too much to a point where the strings snapped.
It's a very confusing instrument, and it's a very imperfect instrument just in its layout. Like, especially when you get into, looking at your action and like how far the strings are off the fretboard, and then intonation. So is the pitch consistent as you go up the frets? And then trying to figure out, like, especially as, you know, if you've never picked up a guitar before, trying to figure out, like, what do these pegs do? How much do I turn them? Like, I find when you start to be around it and just have your hands on it more, it becomes a lot easier to kind of navigate it.
You have a stage name, and it's Gardner. Where did that name come from?
Yeah, Gardner's a weird thing. So I started playing music in, like, January of 2021 is when I took that first guitar class. And then around late October of the same year, I was, like, fiddling around in GarageBand, and I made some rock songs, you know, and at that time I had only ever played, like, acoustic guitar, so it was, like, really exciting and exhilarating. And so I thought maybe I should, you know, do something with them or put them out. And I was, like, I remember I was in my dorm room eating hot dogs and watching Bob's Burgers, and I think Gene or Bob, one of the two, said the word Gardner, and I was like, oh, that's pretty cool. So I kind of used that and put out these songs and kind of abandoned them, and then kept making rock songs throughout the year and into the next year, and eventually put out some demos, like, in December, and decided to get a live band together. So the Lendon Morris side of music, like my more folky kind of stuff, was the first thing I really did. And then Gardner was kind of like an afterthought for a while, but I've been getting more into rock music and stuff, so it's kind of taking its place at the forefront of my consciousness now.
That's a very interesting story about how the name Gardner came to be, and there are all kinds of stories about how bands and musicians got their stage names. Like, you may have heard the story about how Three Doors Down got their name because they stopped at a store and there was a sign that said, "We've moved three doors down," and then the name stuck. So I guess your story is very similar.
Yeah, I didn't even know that. I know the Radiohead one where they had. I was watching a fan made YouTube documentary on them. I've been watching it the past few days, and I forget what their original name was, but then they got signed to a label, and the label was like, yeah, it's a terrible name, pick a new one. So they picked Radiohead from a Talking Heads song, which is super cool, because they're both, like, super great artists who kind of live in the same vein all these years later. So it's like, yeah, it's really weird how band names come to be. It almost never makes sense.
I had to listen to a couple of samples from your debut album, which we're going to talk about a little bit later. Who would you say are your biggest musical influences?
I find, on that album, I find, at the time of writing it, I was listening to a lot of, I was starting to get into, shoegaze music, so I was listening to Always a lot. They put out a record last year that's really good, and so when it came to recording this record and playing the songs live, I kind of leaned into the fuzz pedals, and my band, kind of the band I play with and recorded with on this last record, really kind of understand the kind of sounds we're going for. And so it was a mixture of a lot of things, a little bit of Joel Plaskett, some Built to Spill, some Always in there for sure. I think there's probably some Winter Sleep has crept its way into there somehow, and I'd say those are the biggest influences in terms of, musicianship. And then songwriting wise, I kind of tend to write my songs from this perspective of half serious, half joking, but trying to be really cryptic. So there's a lot of Father John Misty influence on that, and there's some Andy Schaaf influence in the writing too, and Matt Mays, and those are I guess kind of the biggest influences on this record.
For people that aren't familiar with your debut album, what's it called?
It's called Step Out in the Sun. And I guess I've put out two albums, one under Gardner with the band, more rock and roll record. And then I put out a solo album last September called Nothing Good Ever Comes From Healing. And both of those are just lines from songs that I thought kind of really fit the vibe where, of the record and kind of what I was trying to say, where the Nothing Good Ever Comes From Healing was a breakup album, plain and simple. And kind of wondering if healing in the traditional sense is really something that's worth trying, or you get to that point of desperation where you're like, I don't want to try to get better, all this kind of stuff. And then with Step Out in the Sun, it's kind of an album about being in college and at the same time, feeling, that weird feeling of trying to find who you are and being exposed, but with that chance you could, get hurt or burned in this case. So I guess stepping out in the sun is exposing yourself to what could be bright and healthy for you, but at the same time it could burn you, and you kind of have to make that decision. And I think the record is sort of about that conflict of, what do I do? What's the right answer? What do I do? Do you kind of close yourself off, or do you put yourself out there in a way?
So I guess in a way you have two debut albums.
Yeah, I do. In a way, I have my solo album, which is, my official first full-length album I've put out. And then Gardner is the first, it's the debut Gardner record with the incredible band, playing on some of the tracks. And this one's the Gardner debut. And then the last one was the Landon Morris debut. So it's kind of like a Jekyll and Hyde thing, but way less interesting.
So I assume that you have done a few live performances. Where have you performed?
That's a good question. I actually have a list in my phone of every performance I've ever done, where it was, who we played with, just kind of keeping track. I think I'm at number 50. I just hit 54. So as a solo artist, I played a lot at the Groove Box, which is this ice cream coffee place in Port Hawkesbury, and I just kind of pulled up and started playing my guitar there, and the owner was super supportive of it, and so I did there. And then in Annie Ganish, I've done, and with the band, we did Candid Brewery, and then I did Piper's Pub, and Candid a lot. We've played Candid a lot, and I solo have played Candid a number of times too. PEI, Baba's Lounge, I played a show with R.C. Stanley, a great friend of mine, super talented musician. Yeah, Spindrift and Annie Ganesh is a big place, too, for the solo shows. We've done the Seahorse, which was really cool, playing up in Halifax at maybe my favorite venue ever that I go to, I guess, on a consistent level. The Shoebox in New Glasgow is super cool. It's, like, super professional. We did a live album there that will see the light of day sometime. I don't know when, but not soon. The first ever Gardner show, we opened for the incredible Dave Band at Candid in Annie Ganesh. And he kind of messaged me on a Tuesday in December and asked, or Monday in December, and asked if we wanted to play the show on Saturday. And it was exam week, and all my typical musician friends were like super busy except for a very select handful who were super down to play. And so we did this ragtag, like, super last minute show thrown together, but everyone who played was like super talented and stuff. So I guess out of all the times Gardner has ever played, which would be six, half of them were at Candid. So Candid's a super great spot and we love it.
If you could open for any famous musician or any famous band, which ones would you choose?
I think it'd be cool to open for Weezer. I forgot to mention them earlier. They've been a huge influence on me and my songwriting, too. I'm a huge Weezer fan. I have a Weezer tattoo. I'd really like to open for them. That'd be super cool. Built to Spill would be awesome, too. You know, they've got the kind of similar indie rock vibe to what we do. If I could open for anyone who ever, you know, or anyone who's currently performing, I don't know, probably Taylor Swift, because that would get the most eyes on you. She's doing that crazy tour, and she's so great. I think it'd be great to open for Taylor Swift, you know. No better exposure.
Well, it seems like you've had a very successful career, but with success, there are often challenges that come with it. How did you overcome any challenges that you may have faced?
Music, I think, in itself is a challenge. Just based on writing cycles, you know, like, sometimes you'll write, you know, three songs in the span of a month and they're all really good, or sometimes you'll go 6 months without writing something good. That's a really big challenge, I think, just kind of. And to write good songs, it kind of depends on what you consider good. And for me, I think I write my best stuff when I'm not in a great headspace, like when I'm really sad or I'm angry or confused about things. And so that can be a challenge in itself, too, just like having to be in this bad place to write good stuff, you know. I don't think that's always the case, but it certainly can be. I think the key to music and to being successful, on my way working at it, but I think the key to longevity in anything really is to, like, not be too hard on yourself and to kind of, like, just let yourself feel the way you're gonna feel, you know. Let yourself feel stressed out, you know, feel sad, feel angry, feel happy, feel all these emotions, but try not to let them kind of govern you and try to work through them. You know, you can't really get to the light at the end of the tunnel if you don't go into the tunnel. So, yeah, that's hard. In terms of, like, straight up, you know, very blunt challenges, sometimes organizing the venues can be difficult, especially if they have poor communication. There's a venue that it took us, you know, a long time to play, months and months of trying, and then finally got it, and it was like, yeah, it was a lot of nothing in terms of communication. That can be a difficult challenge. I think, too, like, organizing, scheduling is hard because, I mean, none of us are full-time world-traveled musicians, and so we all kind of have to coordinate practices and shows and bookings around real life, you know, around jobs, around school, around prior commitments, around social lives, like, around weather can be a thing in the winter, you know. It's, like, hard to kind of do that, and the best thing, I think, is just to do your best. That's all you can do, you know.
Speaking of commitments, what sort of things do you do when you're not playing music or writing songs?
Yeah, I'm in school still right now. I'm at St. FX, and I'm doing a Bachelor of Arts with a major in sociology and a minor in English. And so right now I'm full-time doing online classes, trying to kind of like finish out my degree. So hopefully by the end of the summer, I'll be totally finished and ready to move on to whatever's next. I did radio too for a long time. Starting in 2019, I started a radio show at CFXU, and then through that, ended up kind of getting a staff position, and last year I was the station manager, which was super cool. It was super fun, and getting to kind of meet so many musicians, and it's a networking opportunity as a radio, you know, station manager, and also as a musician. You meet a lot of great people, and it's super fun. And now I'm done in my in-person portion at SNFX, so I'll no longer be a student next year, and so I had to say goodbye to the station, which sucks, but it's a great station. So those are the things I do outside of music, and a little bit of video and photo work as well. Just trying to live.
Well, I happen to really enjoy university and community stations, especially ones that are run by good universities like SNFX or Laurentian University. I wasn't a student at Laurentian, but I used to host a radio show there where I would play music by independent artists such as yourself, and helping to promote artists that way was a real honor, and I always like to commend community radio stations for doing things like that.
Yeah, it's a super hard job too, because like as a student, you know, we're SNFX in the province, as far as I know, we're the only totally student-operated station. Like, CKDU has full-time staff. I think CJBU in Sydney has full-time staff, but CFXU doesn't. The turnover rate is every year. Like, there's always new people doing new things. And you have to balance, especially, like, where station managers tend to be in, you know, their third or fourth year. It's really hard because you have to balance running a radio station and like coordinating all of this, you know, coordinating a full body of staff and talk, you know, doing meetings, financial meetings, and doing maintenance and stuff like that, and having to understand how everything in the station works and trying to learn to understand how it works. You have to balance all that stuff with being in school full time in your last year, you know, in your final year or your second to last year of study, and then trying to balance social life with that too. And it just becomes like, it's really difficult. And so to work there, like so many people have in the past, like there have been, you know, people call out or not be happy with the work of station managers. But I mean, our station's still alive. I think everyone who's been there so far has done a great job, because if they didn't, you know, if they didn't work really hard and work tirelessly, our station wouldn't still be here, and it wouldn't be in the great place it was in. So it's a really hard job, but it's super rewarding, and I think it's a great asset to community, you know, to be an indie artist and to be able to send your music to a radio station and get it added to the cart, and then you're talking like SOCAN. If you're registered with SOCAN, you get, you know, SOCAN royalties, or you get social media stuff from it too. Like, you get connections and you get your music heard all over, and someone throws the station on one day and they randomly hear your song and they Shazam it, and then you've got a fan, you know. And I mean, CFXU is not a great example of long distance fandom because our broadcast range is 50 watts, but maybe you'll have a fan in Lower South River. Like, you never really know. It's a super cool and super cool asset that's really, really helpful and healthy for the music community, for sure.
It is really cool. I was lucky that the station I worked at didn't require you to be a student. In fact, they had a lot of paid staff as well, and there's quite a few of them that have paid staff too, because the one that I was at was also a quote-unquote community station on top of a campus station. And when I was there, they were still using CD players, and they had a turntable too, which was really cool. And a lot of indie artists had record players, or they had records of their music, rather.
Yeah, we used to get sent like really weird stuff. Like, we'd be getting, you know, in 2023, and it's weird in a cool way, but like, we get LPs and stuff. We still have a turntable at CFXU, but we'd get like LPs. We got cassettes, which was a really weird thing. Like, we don't have a tape deck. So that was really interesting, to get a cassette in the mail, but it's something you don't forget, you know. It's really hard, I think, where there's so much being sent in as a radio station, that to be an artist, it's really difficult to make an impression. So doing something like that, or like sending stickers, or sending a really cleverly designed one sheet, like, we've gotten guitar picks from artists, we've gotten cassettes, like, you never forget that, you know. It's like a really great way to pique someone's interest and say, all right, I'm going to listen to this, you know. And if that person happens to be the station manager or the music director, then you've made a good connection there.
Have you ever played a vinyl record at the wrong speed on the air? Because I did.
You know what? I haven't. I've never played... I think I played vinyl on the air once. Just when our turntable got fixed, I played Helplessness Blues by Fleet Foxes. But I didn't play it on the wrong speed. However, that would probably be hilarious, and I want to hear about it.
Yes, it was very embarrassing at the time, but I definitely laugh about it now. What I did was... beforehand, I played a 45, and then I put an LP on after my talk break, and I forgot to change the speed, so it sounded like chipmunks were singing. So I brought the record back, and I set it to the right speed, and I went back on the air, and I said, and now the long version.
You know what, though? I think doing the inverse of that is really interesting, too. Like, if you had, like, a 45 or a record that spins on 45 and you played it at 33. I'm trying to think. There was an album released in, I want to say, the 80s. 1972, okay. No, it was released in 1980, called Chipmunk Punk. And it's just, like, the chipmunks doing a bunch of punk music. But when it slowed down, it's called, I think it's called Sludge Fest or something. And it's like this really weird, yeah, Chipmunks on 16-speed Sludge Fest. And so it becomes like the greatest post-punk album you've never heard at that speed. You know, it's like, it's really weird. And I feel like it'd be easy to slip up on air too with certain records. Like, I have this Father John Misty record that it's a, you know, 12-inch record, but it spins on 45, which is like really interesting. It's just, vinyl's a tricky game, especially if you're gonna use it in such a fast-paced environment as being on air. So I applaud you for your tenacity in making sure you got it all set up.
Do you think you might release your own vinyl record album someday?
Oh, I'd love to. I have this huge vinyl collection. I buy a lot of new records, so I don't have many like older vintage ones, but I buy a lot of like new albums, and I think it'd be so cool to have an album on vinyl. I think that's like, when I do that, I think I'll be content. But it's so expensive at the same time. Like, it's expensive to produce, and then because of that, you need to make your money back and you need to make a profit, so it's expensive. You kind of have to sell them for a bit more. But it'd be so cool. CDs are hard enough as it is, you know, like several hundred dollars to get an order in, and to have that liquid on hand is hard. But vinyl, I think, is a whole other ball game. Like, a local artist from Antigonish, Piner, we went to St. FX together, and her and her band are super talented, but she just did a vinyl release, which is super cool. It's a really, really cool thing to be able to hold your record in your hands, even if it's like a CD. It's super rewarding.
It's very cool, and it's a very interesting experience. And what you could do is, if you really wanted to make a vinyl record album, you could start a crowdfunding campaign, and then maybe the incentive could be, say, a limited edition signed album or something.
That's actually a really cool idea. For the CDs, like, we have to do like a pre-order campaign, so when we hit a certain number of pre-orders, we'll order it, and at that point, like, you know, we're not out a whole lot of money, and once they get here and you bring them to shows and stuff, you can sell them. But yeah, crowdfunding would be cool too. I think the problem with the Landon Morris and Gardner discography has been a lot in a short amount of time, you know, a lot of shows or a lot of like CDs or Bandcamp or whatever. Like, in the span of the last year, this will be the second CD run for a second album. So I feel like I need to give the listeners a bit of a financial break for a while. I feel like people have been spending way too much money on us, and it's a hard time for everyone. So I'd love to do that maybe for the second or the third album, or do a reissue or something in the future. I think that'd be really cool.
Yeah, either that or maybe a greatest hits album.
Yeah, that'd be cool too. If we ever get to the point where we have, like, I mean, I think all the songs are great, but, you know, that's because I made them all. This is a side tangent, but I don't like the narrative that people put forward of, like, you know, oh, so-and-so listens to their own music and thinks that's, like, a bad thing. You know, like, I get it. Like, if you're, you know, at a party or you're with your friends, like, don't just throw one of your songs on, maybe, and, like, act like it's so great. But I don't think... I had this conversation a few months ago with Sydney Archer, and she's a great musician also out of Annie Ganesh, and we just kind of said, like, yeah, if I'm making this music, I'm making it so that I like it. Like, I wouldn't make music I don't like, so of course I'm going to listen to it. You know, I think that riff's really cool. It's because I made a riff I thought was cool. Like, I think we need to kind of accept that people are going to like the music they make. There is a line between liking it and being pretentious and self-absorbed about it, but I don't think everyone needs to pretend that their music is bad, because you wouldn't make it if you thought that way, you know?
I totally agree. How can people keep up to date with you on social media?
Instagram, it's LM Gardner. It looks like I am, but it's not. It's an L. Facebook, Gardner, I think it's might be LM Gardner Music or something on Facebook. We have a YouTube where we post stuff. We just put out a live performance of I'm Broke, one of the songs from the new record that was recorded at the Shoebox in New Glasgow. Yeah, Spotify, Apple Music, all that stuff. The biggest one, I think, is Instagram. That's where we're the most active and where I post the most about Gardner.
Well, Landon, thank you so very much for joining us today. I really enjoyed hearing all about your music career and the things that you have planned and the things that you did. We wish you all the best of luck in the future.
Yeah, thank you. This was great.
And that was Nova Scotia musician Landon Morris, also known as Gardner. Gardner's debut album, Step Out in the Sun, is now available for purchase on iTunes. Landon's other album, Nothing Good Ever Comes From Healing, is also available on iTunes. Well, that's our show for this week, and remember, here at The Medley, we're all kinds of different.